Roger is here with us now. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Hello, Robert. Hi.
We tend to, some people tend to think that if you have an old structure, all you can do is maintain it. Just sort of look after it, keep it. It's a precious thing. Don't muck about with it. Certainly don't put anything modern on it. But that certainly isn't the idea behind this book, is it?
It's not the idea behind the book, but I have to say that maintenance, of course, is the most important thing about buildings, old buildings, new buildings. And that's a key tenet of what the Society for the Protection of Ancient Buildings, who the book is in association with, is all about, is maintaining old buildings. But at the same time, they're passionate about new architecture and building new alongside the old, because we want to leave something for the 21st century. We want to leave something of our time. And that's what's happened through the ages, actually. The Georgians and the Victorians, they all left something of their time. And in recent years, we've rather tended to, I don't know.
Has there been a sort of crisis of confidence?
Yeah, I think sort of 20 years ago, people were very anxious to keep the past and replicate the past, and everything became a pastiche of the past.
Yeah.
And now we're recognising that new design in the historic environment really, really does work.
I think in the last 10, 15 years, certainly in the period of presenting this show, we've seen an absolute kind of resurgence, haven't we, in contemporary British architecture and also popular perception of modernism in architecture.
Oh, absolutely. When Ian and I set out to write this book, we were slightly worried we were going to have enough examples to put in it. But actually, when we started delving into the new buildings around, the new design in the historic environment, we just found so many examples. It was absolutely amazing. And sadly, we haven't managed to include them all in the book. There's something like 100 examples we looked at for the book.
I mean, London, it seems to me, is particularly pertinent for this because it is a city of juxtapositions, whereas somewhere like Paris or Venice are of a piece. They are, you know, of essentially one. Haussmann's Paris is Haussmann's Paris, and that gorgeous Venetian, you know, kind of view is one thing. It's unified. London isn't that, is it? For all sorts of reasons, London is old and new next to each other, ugly and beautiful, low rise and high rise. It's all of those things.
Oh, that's the absolute joy of London. It is that huge mixture, and the streets are all different sizes, and just everything is mixed up in London. And of course we're sitting in Broadcasting House.
Yeah, which is in the book.
Which is in the book. And of course you've got this wonderful older building next to something that is very, very contemporary and very striking. So,
and does that work, do you think, in this instance?
I think it does. Dare I say anything else? Sitting in the building.
But well, you're sitting in the modern bit.
I'm sitting in the modern bit, but I think it is wonderful. You walk up Regent Street and see that Broadcasting House, and then you come round the corner and you see the modern bit, and I think it's quite striking.
Well, let's talk about this building, seeing as we're in it and it's in the book. One of the things that you have there is you get, it's sort of an attempt for the modern to not replicate the old, but to kind of, I don't know what, to amplify the old or to be in harmony with the old, because it follows the same kind of curvaceous pattern, for example, doesn't it?
I think that's what makes it work, and it's because the new bit doesn't dominate the old. The old is allowed to speak on its own, and the new bit sort of curves away and then comes back on itself. And it creates this wonderful area between the old and the new as well that the BBC use very well for events, and it's used on election night, and it becomes the sort of backdrop to, it becomes a studio, actually, sometimes. So it is an incredibly clever bit of design.
Because there are different ways you can approach old and new combining together. You can try and do it harmoniously, or sometimes you can intentionally go for, kind of, I'm a jazz fan, you can go for discordancy, can't you?
Yeah, I think sometimes the shock factor actually does work really well. And I think that's what makes people sort of attracted to it sometimes, that, you know, they love new architecture, but they sometimes realise they love old as well, because there are two camps in architecture, the old and the new sometimes, but we're seeing this great merging of the two.
I've just opened the book at a kind of random page, and I've seen what for me is that beautiful, I didn't even know it was called the Bridge of Aspiration, the bridge in Covent Garden that links the two buildings.
That is the most,
it's beautiful, isn't it?
It is absolutely beautiful, and we were lucky enough to go inside that.
Were you? What's it like from the inside?
It is fantastic, and you get these little views out as you're walking across it. And it is the Bridge of Aspirations because the pupils from the Royal Ballet School go across the bridge into the opera house there. So it's that transition, and it is just the most beautiful building inside and out.
If people live in old buildings, do they have to be very conscious if they're doing extensions and all of that sort of stuff, do you think?
Oh, definitely. I think so many people don't think through extensions, and they don't think through why they're building an extension very often. They see it as a way of creating new space, but what they forget is that you need to reach that new space, and very often the older bit of the building then becomes a bit redundant and you end up with this sort of corridor into the new. And it's very important, whether it's a domestic building or any other sort of building, that you actually make the two work together in harmony so that all parts of the building are still used and there is this clever transition between the two.
You also get sometimes, it seems to me, that there are other reasons that it sometimes doesn't work very well. Is that about use of materials, or is it about the fact that, I mean, what are the kind of mistakes that people make, do you think?
I think materials are one of the key issues with any building project, whether you're trying to do this sort of thing or whether you're just building something brand new, whether it's to do with the historic environment or not. Materials are so often overlooked. People just specify a brick and they don't actually think about the type of brick.
Like, I get really, not annoyed is not the right word, but I get really sometimes bizarrely over animated when I see buildings made in London of brick, which is fine, and particularly contemporary buildings made in London brick. But why not use stock London brick? Why go for that darker red colour, which seems to me to be completely out of place in London? That isn't London brick. That's the brick of Manchester or Stoke or those kind of slightly darker northern towns. London is that yellowing, beautiful stock brick.
Yes, I agree, but I think sometimes it's good to be brave as well.
You
shouldn't just use what is there. You should be brave. And there's some wonderful glazed bricks. I was at a new build development the other day, and they had used beautiful glazed bricks, some of them black and others white. And the contrast and the sort of vitality that brought to the development was incredible.
So it doesn't matter then if you're fitting in with the kind of typology of a town. So say, for example, you were building a building in Edinburgh, let's pick Bath, because we all know that Bath has that kind of uniformity and that lovely yellow golden stone that is Bath stone. Is it a good idea to go out on a limb and do it in something very different? Or?
Well, I think it's horses for courses, isn't it? You can't always... you can't create rules for this sort of thing. It is very much where it is. I think if you've got a wonderful old building, you don't want to, just for the sake of it, go in and create something that is such a contrast that it spoils the whole area. And I mean, you can think about that when you see a row of terraced houses and someone decides to put stone cladding on one of them. That just doesn't work. No. And the same thing can happen if you're creating a new building.
An old building and you love the old building, but it's got to be adapted for the modern world? Like, for example, it doesn't give enough light. I mean, a lot of old buildings had very small windows, and these days we prefer much more light and glazing and glass, or they don't work. It's not working because it's really inefficient for heating and all. What's the way to approach those kind of problems, do you think?
Well, it depends whether you're building an extension or you're just trying to create light
in
the present
building.
If you're trying to adapt a building, there are things like sun tubes that you can introduce where you have a dome on the roof and it brings light down a tube into the inside of the building. Mm. You can sometimes put roof lights in to get light in over stairwells and that sort of thing. There are ways of changing windows and putting new windows in sometimes, but it will depend very much on the building. But I think light is a hugely important thing for our health.
Yep.
We don't want to live in dark buildings. And the important thing we need to think about is that we have to make buildings suitable for our present age. We can't just live with the past. We do have to adapt buildings because that's the only thing that makes them sustainable into the future. Otherwise, we're going to end up with buildings that are useless.
You can also, though, get the kind of the tyranny of the present day. For example, what I mean by that is that there's an awful lot of, to my eyes, rather mediocre glass and steel buildings going up in London at the moment that could be in Toronto, that could be in Kuala Lumpur, that could be anywhere in the world, that they're modern and they're bright and they've got lots of glass and they're glazed, but they're nondescript and they're not London. They don't reflect the city. They don't feel like ours. They don't feel distinct or unique.
No, I think glass is used badly, glass is a terrible material.
So do I.
But it can be used well.
Yes,
well,
of
too.
Course.
And yep. And moving away from London, I was in Bath, and it's one of the buildings in the book, the Holborn Museum.
Right.
And they've put this fantastic glass cube on the back of this beautiful Bath stone building. But they've done it in such a way that it really lives. And they've used ceramics as well, mixed in with the glass. They've got ceramic fins. And that creates interest. It stops it just being sort of glass on its own. But I think what we have to remember is how materials age. Old materials age beautifully. You know, they crumble.
They they take a patina.
They take on a patina of age. Yeah. And glass is actually a terrible example of aging. It doesn't age well.
No.
Because it new buildings need to look crisp. And if you lose that crispness, which is what happens to glass over time, it gets dirty, it gets stained, it gets a sort of algae on it.
Yep.
And it also gets scratched. People very often use glass for flooring. And you see it getting scratched.
Yeah, it looks awful quite quickly.
We visited a museum and it had footprints, it was scratched, it looked really terrible. So you have to be very careful. And also this idea that you're going to have this transition between the old and the new, and you're going to have a glass panel, which is sort of something that is loved by a lot of people that build new buildings. This glass slot does not work terribly well in a lot of cases because it's just too obvious, I think, sometimes.
Detailing is very important, isn't it, in these kind of issues?
Oh, detailing with
the devil
all
is in the detail.
Yes, yes. And that's actually why pastiche often doesn't work, because people try and replicate something that's Georgian, but they've missed the detail. They don't look at what a Georgian building truly is.
I mean, it seems to me that I think Georgian architecture is something that most of us would admire when it's, well done, and whether it's in a domestic or, a larger scale. And the point about the Georgian architecture, if you're going to try and do it in a modern contemporary sense, is more about the notions of symmetry and the scales and the heights of the rooms, and rather than trying to ape those actual kind of buildings, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yes. But what makes Georgian architecture is also the sort of fine detail, as well as all the proportions and the symmetry. You look at a Georgian window. It is beautiful the way it is crafted. And you've got those very fine glazing bars. And, of course, you've got the beautiful old glass that, going back to glass, old glass had this lovely sort of vibrancy.
And it kind of droops.
Yes, because of the way it was made, it has ripples and defects.
I'm lucky enough to live in a house of that era, and my windows do all of those things.
No, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. And that is the problem with modern glass. It's just flat and it's lifeless, and it creates a very blank face to the building.
Do you have to be equally careful if you're adapting modern buildings? Like, for example, you've got a picture of the National Theatre in here, which has had kind of extensions added to it. I mean, it's just as important if you're dealing with Dennis Lasdon's architecture as it is if you're dealing with a medieval piece of architecture.
Oh, yes, and the work done at the National Theatre is amazing, the way that has been done, and so thoughtfully done. Mm. And the new workshop that has been added on the back is a really good example of something that is new compared with a building that actually, it's not that old. It's 1974 or something, the National Theatre. So that's what we've tried to show, too, in the book, that we are talking about medieval buildings, but we're also talking about buildings of the sort of second half of the 20th century. People might think...
And we're certainly readdressing a lot of those buildings, aren't we now? Sometimes a little too late, but things like brutalism and the buildings of the 60s and 70s are being looked at in a very different light, aren't they?
Yes, and I think it's sad that so many of
those...
They've gone. People, buildings built in the 50s and 60s are being pulled down, which is shocking, and that's not sustainable. We have to build buildings that are going to last.
But in the end, though, you have to be able to determine the good from the bad. You keep the good and you let the bad, move on, don't you?
Yes, but we shouldn't be building the bad in the first place,
I would argue. But every era is going to have its good buildings and its less good buildings. That's inevitable.
It is, but I think we need to up our game. And I think the architectural profession is realising that. And I think the problem is it's not just architects. We need to extend that to the clients that commission these buildings as well. And I think that's what we're very keen to do, is make people realise the value of good new design.
Well, if this is a subject that interests you, this is the book for you. New Design for Old Buildings by Roger Hunt and Ian Boyd, in association with the Society for the Protection of Ancient Buildings, and published by the RIBA. Roger, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Robert.